when it was all above board and transparent, it felt like we were a team figuring out something that was scary. I think when there isn't transparency, and of course people have embarrassment and shame, but when we shut the doors to people knowing, everyone starts to get scared and panicky. And we start to feel really isolated and alone in this thing that was a joint. This wasn't an isolated experience.
Welcome to Making Polyamory Work. Hi, I'm Libby Sinbeck, and I want to thank you for joining me today. I'm a queer polyamorous mom and a relationship transformation coach who is committed to helping people who live in love outside the box have absolutely extraordinary relationships. That's because I believe that relationships are at the core of our well-being as humans, and I believe that love is why we're here and how we heal. I'm excited to share another two-part episode with Jessica Fern. Now, I'm guessing some of you listening might know who Jessica Fern is. She is the author of Polysecure and the Polysecure Workbook, which just recently came out. She's also a psychotherapist, a coach, and a certified clinical trauma professional. And she's also just awesome and my friend. And I'm so grateful that we were able to grab this time together from both of our busy schedules. On this episode, we together answer like a little group of listener questions that were all around the topic of privacy, transparency, secrecy, etc., and basically how and what do you share and with whom and when and all of that, which is something that comes up a lot in my work and in hers as well. One last thing I want to mention before we dive into the episode is that Jessica and I will also both be teaching at the Southwest Love Fest conference in Tucson, Arizona in April. I cannot say enough wonderful things about Southwest Love Fest. This will be my fourth year attending and my third year teaching as part of the conference. I just think that Sarah and Kate, who are the event organizers, put on an amazing event. I find that they bring in amazing speakers and teachers with topics that are like 101 level, 201 level, 501 level in all aspects of non-monogamy and relationships and sex and understanding yourself. And it's just an incredible, incredible time to be there, learn stuff, connect with other people, and just be in a space where people are really interested in talking about how to do relationships better and how to love each other better and how to live in this world that is not necessarily always friendly to people who are living and loving outside the box. So if you want to come to Southwest Love Fest, I encourage it heartily. Again, it's in Tucson, Arizona. The dates are April 14th through the 16th of this year. And if you want to get 10% off your ticket to Southwest Love Fest, you can use my secret coupon code, which I'm teaching a workshop on how to go slow in dealing with all kinds of stuff that might come up in relationships, like how to slow down, because sometimes slowing down really helps. I'm teaching that with my partner, Keir Kark. And so the code for getting your 10% discount at Southwest Love Fest is go slow, all one word. So use that coupon code if you register to get 10% off. And then please, please, please come find me and say hello. I would love to meet a whole bunch of you wonderful listeners at the conference. And if you want, maybe we can even set up like a Making Polyamory Work meet and greet. I would love to do that. So if you're interested in that, also let me know. Let me know if you're going to show up. Okay, now we're going to get to the conversation with Jessica Fern. Well, Jessica, I'm so excited to have you on Making Polyamory Work. We've been scheduling and rescheduling this call for a little while, and I'm so glad that we're both here. And I'm excited about what we're going to talk about today.
Me too. Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Cool. So I'm going to read these questions from listeners. So Jessica, you know, I kind of gave you a list of questions that you could pick from that you would like to answer together. And you found three that kind of are on the same-ish topic. And so,
the theme.
So it's a theme. And I love that. And I think that's perfect. So the theme is privacy, transparency, and secrecy. And how do you navigate sharing information?
Yep.
And so the first question that I got from a listener was, I have a question about something you haven't covered much, privacy. Everyone has different expectations, ranging from no secrets among partners to everything between us is in confidence always. Are there general guidelines for how to navigate this, or is this something to be addressed individually only? And at what point do these discussions need to happen? In other words, if I start flirting with someone, should I assume that everything between us is private immediately, or assume that it's my partner's business until they state otherwise, or what? So that's the first one.
Great.
And I think that's just kind of a great overall yes. question. And it's a question I get a lot from my clients too. So I'm really glad this listener asked it. And I'm going to go ahead and pair it with the second question, which is, you know, a little more specific, which is, you know, hi, I am new to your podcast and I have recently fallen in love with someone who's polyamorous. And I've historically been monogamous and I still feel mostly that way. And right now I'm trying to navigate this whole new world. And I'm wondering, have you talked about when your Hinge shares intimate details about your sex life with them, with his other partner? I don't want to be a prude, this listener says, but I feel a little bit like my privacy has been a bit violated. And this person in this email didn't go into detail about like why or what or how. So I'm making up a lot about like what was going on there, but it sounds like what this person is saying is that their partner told a lot of intimate sexual details to his other partner without checking with the new person. And this new person's like, well, is that okay? I don't feel okay. But is that the norm? So,
yeah, these are great.
Yeah.
Which should we start with?
I feel like I want to start with the second one, actually.
Yeah. I was like, let's jump into that one, those details. Yeah. So, do you want to jump in first or?
I think maybe the first thing to say about this is actually that both of these people are asking the question, what's normal?
Right.
Like what is normal? What's okay? What's the policy and procedure here? Because I just don't know.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting that the second question was asking the question like, I'm from a monogamous mindset. Do you do things different if you're poly than the way that I would just kind of automatically do things? And again, you know, as a person who has never really gotten social conventions very easily.
Yeah.
And so I really do have to kind of get really clear on it and ask a lot of questions. You know, I've always had to do that. You know, I understand this desire for norms, but like, I don't even know what's normal for monogamy. I don't know. I think that actually the idea that there is a normal for monogamy is actually maybe not true either. You know, I think everybody does things a little differently, even in monogamy.
Exactly.
It's just that it's all unspoken,
right?
And not explicit. But the thing that I would say is what I'm making up this person, where this person is coming from, is that everything behind closed doors is private. Because I do think that is a norm that I see out in monogamy world. Like we don't really talk about the intimate details of our relationship with anybody is what I see as kind of the norm. Is that what you see?
I think so. Yeah. I would say that's the norm in monogamy. That what we do behind closed doors is ours. I like that. Yeah. And yet it feels like, of course, there's exceptions, you know, that like women or femmes are like sharing it with their girlfriends or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's where you share the details with your, you know, your bestie, so to speak. So in more heteronormative relationships, that can be, you know, those rules are bended a bit with your friends.
Yeah. Well, and for sure it has been with mine, but again, I'm not, I've always been like, I don't think I'm a good barometer for what's normal.
Right.
And then we get into polyamory where, or any kind of non-monogamy really, where, like we're already not doing what's normal or what's considered quote unquote normal. I think it's very normal, but So I'm wondering when, you know, when your clients come to you, Jessica, with this question, because I think we both said we get this a lot.
Right.
How do you tend to answer?
Yeah. Well, thinking of this person who said intimate details of their sexual experiences were shared, right?
Yeah.
And they don't want to be a prude. So right there, I'm just like, ouch, prude. Like,
yeah, she's being hard on herself.
It's a self-judgment, right?
Oh, actually, I shouldn't say she because
I don't know.
Yeah.
Actually, they didn't.
Oh, okay. We don't know. Okay.
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So this person, we don't know, but they're being hard on themselves and judging themselves sort of in an extreme that like you're a prude.
Right.
And I think this happens a lot in non-monogamy that people are like, oh, if I don't want to watch my partner be sexual with someone else right in front of me or hear them have sex in the next room, then I'm not polyamory enough or I'm a prude. And there's this thing that happens in polyamory where it's like, why have your rights just been taken away? You know, your rights to like preferences, boundaries, consent, you know, what you want to be exposed to, what you don't, and obviously privacy. So, So I think, yes, if you're not okay with your partner telling other people about intimate sexual details, that is a healthy, completely okay boundary.
Yes.
You know, that, like, what's the minimum that other person needs to know to feel like we're all practicing safer sex agreements and in alignment with enough transparency? So how far did we go? That's the thing that's on the table to share, right? But all the intimate details, no, I don't think that has to be shared unless that's an erotic fun thing for everyone involved and you're saying, yes, let's do it.
Yeah, well, and I think you said a word in all of that that I want to pull out, which is consent. Which is consent. Because consent is, I think, the name of the game here in general when we're talking about privacy and secrecy and transparency and all of it, because there's like two components to consent, right? There's me protecting my own boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. Like what feels sacred and important to belong to me and that no one else be allowed to just violate my boundaries. And in that case, if like this person's sexual activities with their partner feels like private to them and not something that they want shared without their permission, then, and it shouldn't, I just want to say just for anybody listening objectively, if you're thinking that you might want to share something that feels like it might possibly be private and it may not be sex. It may be, you know, they got in a car accident last week and they're feeling embarrassed about it. And that might feel private to them or their cat just died or whatever, you know, like anything that might feel like something that feels intimate to them. It's actually generally a really, really good practice to ask, hey, is it okay if I share this with my other partner or my best friend or my mom or whoever, right? Like,
Is it mine to share?
Yeah. And that's a thing that I always kind of keep in my head a lot is this story mine to share? And did I ask permission to share it if it's not? And it, I mean, I will just say to this listener, you know, yes, your privacy was violated.
Yes, right.
Because nobody checked with you. Nobody checked with you.
And then it creates a power dynamic where this other person that they may or may not know this metamor.
Right.
Now has a lot of details that they might not have those kind of details on that person.
Yeah.
Right. And this, right. And who knows what the hierarchy setup was here, but that first, there was a first partner before them. Right. And that in itself creates a dynamic. Right.
Well, and that speaks to like where this crashes into couple privilege too, right? Where it's like, you know, it's so interesting to me that this person isn't like, well, but, you know, tell me all about your sexual activities with your other partner, you know?
Exactly.
And it's interesting how that happens where you highlighted it just so clearly, like the information was going one way, the information about this new partner was going to the established partner. And I hear about that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a story about this actually. Shall I?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was in a relationship with a man and he had a partner before me, her, and he was telling me about some kind of thing going on between them. And he just started to screenshot their text and sent it to me. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, does she know you're just like screenshotting your texts? You know, it's one thing for him to say, these are the things that are going on. But he was like, well, it's just easier to do that. And I was like, do you do this with my text? He's like, right. And he was like, yeah, I have. I was like, no way. You know, like our dialogue is private to us. If you want to share with her certain things, I'm okay that you're relaying them. But just to send screenshots of our conversations wasn't okay. And then she, so in a similar vein, she wanted to know all the details about his and my sex. And it was really, and it was the couple privilege was this is what they had done with everyone else before.
Yeah.
Right. And because everyone else before also, I don't think was really a relationship. It kind of was more of a hookup. So it had this, like, it was leveraged as like almost foreplay for them the next time they were together, you know?
Yeah.
And that was also, I was like, no, like, you know, you can share if you liked the sex, if you want to keep having sex with me, like those are things you can share with your partner. Or if you're exploring new things within yourself that you want your partner to know that, like, you know, but no, like detail by detail, what we did and
Well, and that speaks to back going back to consent, because there's another piece in here that I want to like put a pin in and talk about later, because there's the information is like belongs to me, what belongs to me, what belongs to you, what's my consent, what's your consent, what affects you, all of that. And then there's information is power.
Yeah.
And information indicates who's powerful in that situation. But I want to go back to consent, because there's another piece to the consent, which is then also like what you were saying before, what affects me, right? And this is where it can get really hairy, honestly, because, you know, and here's where we can talk maybe about STIs, you know, things like that. And this came up in my community a whole bunch, where like if one partner, if one of my partner's partners maybe had some kind of STI exposure, right? That was their private information. Like that's their private health information. And at the same time, if my partner has a sexual relationship with them and then I have a sexual relationship with them, then that information affects me. Mm-hmm. And it's tricky because like, I'm not necessarily entitled to know who of their, like, depending on the privacy desires of the other partner, I might not have the right to know, like, specifically it was them and specifically what they might have or, you know, anything like that or what might be going on for them. I'm only entitled to know what's going on for my partner as thus, as far as it impacts me. And at least that's where kind of I draw the line, but other people might feel differently about it. And it's tricky because, certain things might affect me that still might not be mine to know, you know?
Exactly.
Like I might be really uncomfortable if my partner engages with a particular sex act with someone besides me. And you know, it, and if we have an agreement around it, like, and we've made some kind of agreement that they will disclose that, then they need to, you know, they need to make sure that they've gotten the agreement from the other person that they can disclose it and all that stuff. But like, it might affect me, but it might not be my business, you know? And like, I might really want to know and affect how I feel about my relationship with my other partner, but I still might not get to know about it. And that can be really uncomfortable. And so, and, you know, and at the same time, I have a right to informed consent.
Yeah.
To people I'm in a relationship with.
Yeah.
I guess I'd love for you to talk about how you like, I mean, and this feels kind of personal. How you navigate this.
No, it's great. Cause I think, right, what you're talking about is sometimes the setup of like your partner had an STI scare with another partner.
Yeah.
And they can just come to you and say, hey, I have a partner. There's an STI scare. Here's what you and I need to do. Yeah. And that like works, right? But if they only have one other partner, then you know who it is.
Yeah, you can do the math.
Exactly. Right, you can do the math. Or maybe they have two, but you're close with the other one and you know who it is, right? So there's just like, we can know, right?
Right.
I mean, I've been in the situation with the people I just talked about where there was an STI scare and she was the one that came to me. Because it was, you know, she had an experience and she came directly because we had that relationship and that felt really wonderful, right? And then her and I could process it and then all three of us could process it through together. What are we going to do? What are we not going to do? Right. So when it was all above board and transparent, it felt like we were a team figuring out something that was scary. Yeah. I think when there isn't transparency, and of course people have embarrassment and shame, but when we shut the doors to people knowing, everyone starts to get scared and panicky. And we start to feel really isolated and alone in this thing that was a joint. This wasn't an isolated experience, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's, and that can be where it can get really tricky if you are in a situation where you're not in good relation with all of your metamors, right?
Exactly.
Or terramors, you know, further steps further out. And, you know, it's really nice when you can have that kind of tight knit polycule feeling with your partners where you can all sit, like you said, kind of sit down together and collaborate on, oh, hey, this is what happened. This is how we're going to handle it. These are the protocols we're all going to take, and et cetera. But I mean, I definitely have been in the experience where that wasn't the case, where right. I had a metamor who was not communicative with me, didn't yeah. want, like my business was not her business and her business was not my business. And there was this, it was awful. In fact, I think it was the major thing that led me to temporarily break up with the partner mm-hmm. that I was with is we were all on this like online Facebook discussion group. One of my, this wasn't even a partner. It was like a kind of a play partner, like someone who I had played with one of my other partners. And they posted on a shared group that was very private. Like it was just like femmes and non-binary folks. And we would post about like, you know, makeup and body stuff and, you know, how to cure yeast infections and things like that. And it was like this really lovely bonded group for the time that it was really great. And this person was posting, you know, again, some intimate details about some discharge that they were experiencing and was like, you know, what might this be? And my metamor saw that post, knew again through information that wasn't really theirs to have through my partner that I had had a sexual encounter with them and was like, oh, does that person have an STI? Right. And does that mean Libby's been exposed to an STI? And does that mean that my partner that we share has been exposed to? I mean, it was this whole thing. And then all of these conversations were happening between the two of them about it that I had no idea about. And they were trying to come up with solutions around it that I had no idea about. And the reality was nobody asked me anything about it. And if they had asked me, if we had had that relationship, which would have been, I actually would have preferred that. I could have told them we didn't exchange any bodily fluids during our sexual encounter. And so I was at no risk of contracting anything from them. you can have lots of sex without exchanging any bodily fluids.
Right. True. True statement.
Yeah. And it was really fun.
and you're bringing in a whole other factor here of social media, like,
oh my God,
that forums and people complaining about metamors and partners or revealing things in these public forums, even if mm-hmm. it's a closed group, right? And you're not the only one I've heard that like information spreads and gets shared that way. And it's,
or even just from a shared community or right. from stalking someone on Instagram and seeing what they're posting about. And I've had clients who have like noticed that their partners, like somebody had liked something on their page
yeah.
Or were commenting a lot. And then they were asking questions like, what is going on with that person? And that's a whole, that is a whole nother thing where, I actually have blocked people from having access to, things that I've been posting. And in fact, this metamor was one of them. After that happened, I was like, okay, like blocked.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's like causing drama. Right. Avoidable drama.
There was a lot of drama. I mean, a lot of drama that would have been circumvented actually by being more transparent and being more willing to communicate and ask questions.
Yeah.
But I also want to highlight the reason why that wasn't happening was not because we were like deliberately trying to be secretive or, you know, get power over each other or anything like that. It was that we really struggled to communicate effectively mm-hmm. and collaboratively. And so we just decided for our own well-being to not, rather than to work on it.
Yeah.
And really that wasn't a mutual decision. That was a her decision. But like, I respect it. I think a thing worth saying here, and maybe this can go into our other mm-hmm. topic, that, you know, from my perspective, there's what's allowed. There's what needs to be explicitly negotiated, which I think, you know, we're both really clear in answer to the first listener's question that like, you actually do need to explicitly negotiate where your comfort levels are with what's shared and not shared. And there is nothing that is just like 100% fair game if it involves another person.
Right.
Like you should check with them. And if you know for yourself, like these are the things that I definitely will share, that's also worth communicating. Like this is my policy. This is what I tend to like to do so that someone can opt in or opt out of that as well. Because you also can't control what someone will share or not share, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Right. And to that first question, even like, if I flirt with someone, do I need to share? And that is case by case. You know,
absolutely.
I've had with one partner, we're like, yeah, like until you're having genital contact, I don't really need to know. Cause that was the nature of our relationship, or like until there's like touching, you know, at that level, I don't need to know. With other people, it's like, oh, once you're like planning and like in an official dating situation, I want to know. You know, I have one partner who's like, I do want to know when you have flirts, because it's fun for, like, it excites them, you know, and it's not really like, if I had a flirt with a barista, it's, I'm not breaking anything for that barista. You know what I mean? Like, it's fun to be like, oh yeah, they had these great tattoos and they flirted with me this way. And we like doing that, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is case by case, but I think just making sure it's clear. What do you want to know? What don't you need to know?
Well, yeah. And I guess I'll add one more thing to that, that just came up as you were talking, like, why do you want to know?
Why do you want to know?
Because I think that's really important too, because some people want to know because it's fun and hot and sexy. Some people want to know because it makes them feel safe.
Yeah. Exactly.
Some people don't want to know because it makes them feel safe, or they want to hold on to their information because it makes them feel safe.
Yeah.
And I guess that's like, that's where, again, it can get tricky, because someone's need for safety might bump up against someone else's need for safety.
Exactly.
And their safety needs might be conflicting. Like, for me, I feel safe with a lot of information. Mm-hmm. And that's because, like, you know, I grew up in a family where there was a lot that just wasn't talked about. And I would feel blindsided by things sometimes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there was some dishonesty. So for me to know what's going on, also, I think because of my neurodivergence, and that sometimes I just, like, don't get stuff. So it's like, if you can just explain it to me, I feel safer. Mm. But I think for some people, and in fact, I had someone show up in one of my discussion groups where, because of a lot of trauma around feeling, you know, really violated, her feeling was, I don't want you to talk about me to anybody, period, at all. Like, the level of control that she wanted over her information was actually more than I think was reasonable or fair. But like, it was coming from this place of, that's the only way that I'm going to feel safe, or it feels like that's the only way I'm going to feel safe.
Yeah. And I get it. And there's a parallel here to, like, when someone becomes a public figure, right? That some of our life now is not completely private, you know? And there's a similar parallel, smaller degree, in polyamory, especially non-monogamy, you know, where it's like, yeah, there is a certain allowance of, people do need to know more information about us than we might have previously been comfortable. It kind of comes with this paradigm of relating.
Well, yeah, because of accountability, because you have to, because of the impact you can have on other people.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, the ideal would be, so I mean, going back to the ideal, like, the ideal would be, we all share with each other to support each other. You know, to support each other's needs and feelings and joy and all of that. And ideally, I mean, like, your scenario that you described with the STI scare, where you all, like, came together and could talk about it. Like, that's ideal.
Yeah, it was ideal.
It's not always possible.
Yeah.
And so it really is, I do think it's really case by case. And I had these clients that that were brand new to polyamory. Like, they weren't even really practicing it yet, but they were just exploring. And this question came up because one of them was developing just a really intimate friendship. And she was like, I don't know what I'm allowed to say about friendship with my partner. And I don't know what my partner wants to know. And how do I figure that out? And I was like, ask.
Yeah.
You can ask.
Right.
It's like mind blowing. Like, right. Oh my God, I could just ask. How do you feel about me sharing this? And I still ask all the time. Not just of my partners, but like, a family member recently was telling me about a really traumatic incident that happened. And they were telling me privately because we have a trusted relationship, but, you know, they're a member of my family. And so I asked them, you know, are you comfortable with me sharing this with, like, my partner, my mother-in-law, like, whoever? And, you know, I think that asking permission to share is, like, a great practice. And asking and checking on it periodically over and over again, like, not assuming that you know always what's okay to share and what's okay not to share.
Yeah. And I usually see people feel very empowered when they are asked that, and they get to then define the parameters. Okay. Yeah. Please just don't share this piece. But if you share this piece, it's okay.
Yeah. It's so much better than just confiding in somebody and crossing your fingers and not knowing
totally
whether they have good boundaries around this or not.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And the truth is, rarely do I see secrets actually stay as secrets. Like, a lot of them come out, they leak, they slip with time, and, you know. Yeah.
Well, and that brings us to our other topic.
Thank you so much for joining me today. If you have any thoughts about what I've said or a question for the show, I would love to hear from you. You can reach me via my website, libbysinbeck.com, or you can connect to me on any of my social channels. I'm on Instagram and Facebook. I'll also say that if you're loving my podcast, but feel like your relationship could maybe use some more help, this is work I do with my coaching clients and in the relational non-monogamy circle. If you're interested, you can either set up a free introductory session with me to see if coaching might be a fit for you, or check out the Relational Non-Monogamy Circle online at libbysinbeck.com/RNMC. If you love this podcast, please share it. Share it with your friends, your networks, your Facebook groups, etc. And make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you listen on iTunes or Stitcher, it would be super awesome if you left a review or a comment, because that will help more people find the show. Making Polyamory Work is created by me, Libby Sinbeck. It is edited by Finn of the Normalizing Non-Monogamy podcast and hosted on the Anchor.fm platform. Van de Leon manages the website and posts the transcripts. Thanks for being with me today, and I'll see you soon.